There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1005, August 14th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rogers, as you know, there is no Formula One action, but a whole lot of shaking going around. Montoya drives a jet dryer, Emo in Nando's corner, just like you, Mario wants Montezemolo back, and Zach Brown gets an Isaac Hayes CD. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, did Ferrari make an offer to LCH? Can Aston Martin return El Machismo to the podium? What in the world is happening with Alex Palou? And Monterey Car Week is here, ladies and gentlemen. It is this weekend. We encourage folk to get in your car, drive to Laguna Seca and beautiful Monterey, and visit the associated car shows. It's going to be a big weekend, and Laguna Seca will have vintage Formula One, F5000, David Hobbs might even be there. So folks, you got to show up, you got to be cool, and if you do, contact F1Weekly.com. Nas, that is going to be one big weekend for you as well. And I just want to remind everybody, this week's special interview from deep in the archives is the wonderful young man that we loved so much, Jules Bianchi. And I must remind everybody, we do need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab right on the front page. You know, you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. Did you take your vitamins? You got your plane ticket? We're getting your passes. Are you ready for this big weekend?
Yes, sir. I am flying out on Thursday, and I will be in the friendly skies, and then we will stop in Denver, CO, Colorado, and then I will be back in the Golden State later this week, looking forward to it very much, and also looking forward to the platinum smile of the host. And today, you know, we have a fully loaded in-flight burrito with jalapeno and sour cream, and we shall start with serving with man of the moment and season, Mr. Max Verstappen. But before we get into the nitty-gritty details, do you know if David Hobbs is there for sure?
You know, I don't know for sure, but I heard he was going to be there with the F5000 folk. But you never know. It's rumor, it's innuendo. I'm not sure. I couldn't separate them, but it's a possibility.
I have reached out to some people. I will not take any names to confirm who is there. Unfortunately, nobody has responded. I did not even get a return to sender. No such address. So we will see. I understand Zach Brown will be there, and I'm hearing a rumor that Adrian Newey will be there.
That's correct. Zach Brown will definitely be there. Adrian Newey is scheduled to drive his GT40, and he is a vintage car racer through and through. Adrian Newey attends a lot of these vintage races, and Laguna Seca is quite popular with the British.
Yes, well, it's one of their colonies, you know, from days gone by. But, you know, Mr. Rogers, trying to interview these people without getting any confirmation is like trying to, you know, like they say in racing, catching up to a driver is one thing, passing is another. So what may happen, I will never forget when Lexus was sponsoring this and 10, 15 years ago, and it was really, really popular. There was so much Lexus people, third-party security. You know who was there? And I was able to say at least hello. Alan Jones, Patrick Tambay, Jean-Pierre Gerrier, so many people. Timo Glock was there. Actually, he won the Toyota celebrity race they had that day. And the only thing we could do is just get a brief interview with Emerson Fittipaldi. And that only happened because he wanted to talk to me, which was very kind of him. If he can get either Zach Brown, especially with what's going on with Palu or Adrian Newey or David Hobbs, I would love to talk to him because I enjoy his work, done, blowed up, very, very much. And he now lives, you know, he used to own a Honda dealership in Wisconsin. Now I am told he has done what everybody does when they retired. Moi included, live in Florida. So we will see what we can do. But sir, moving on to this in-flight burrito here, Max is on a record-breaking run and has impressed a lot of people around the world. But just as Lewis Hamilton did not impress everyone, despite winning more races than Michael Schumacher, there are some among us who think Max is afortunado, Spanish for lucky. Meet Mr. Montoya. Juan Pablo Montoya, the one and only, and definitely one of the great racing talents of our time. Have you read what he said, sir?
Yes, I couldn't stop laughing and giggling, but I did read it, and I'm more with Dr. Marco's opinion than with Senor Montoya.
Yeah, Senor Montoya said, and he's quoted in Formula Passion, which is a website or a publication story, and let me quote him here. In place of Max, there are about 7 or 8 riders who could be world champions with Red Bull. For example, Perez, Hamilton, Sainz, Leclerc, Norris would be world champions. End quote. Unlike you, I have to agree with him, even on Sergio Perez, because Checo would be world champion if only Max Verstappen was racing in NASCAR like the 2009 world champion. Now think about it. Who wouldn't want to see Max racing at the LA Coliseum on a dirt track? What say you, amigo?
Well, yeah. I mean, if there's no Max Verstappen, anybody on the grid could be world champion. There's a possibility. The crux of the whole situation is the Max factor. I mean, you have to put that in there, Juan. So, hey, I don't believe anybody on this grid will beat Max in the same Red Bull car, even Fernando. I think Max is only 25 years old. We've got to face the reality that LCH and Fernando are super machismo, but they're becoming a little forgetful. Yes, they're getting older, wrinkly. There is no way they could beat this guy. This guy is a phenomenon. So that's my thought. I've watched him, and it looks unbelievable. So everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I think it's great. And you know what? Max went out and learned how to drift, apparently by one of the big boys in Drift Formula. I think it's Formula Drift. I'm not sure. But apparently he mastered it in about 20 seconds. So Max is very talented, folks.
I could not agree with you more. And you know, which reminds me of a conversation I was having with a papito of a young talented driver. And the issue was brought up of days of testing. And, you know, if you're coming new into racing, that's one thing. Then you need a lot of testing. But if you have raced for 5 years or even 3 or 4 years in single seaters, if you need 20 days of testing to get up to speed, I had no choice but to tell the daddy, if that's the case, then you don't have a Formula One driver on hand. And I gave the example of, the guy who won the very first Chinese Grand Prix. He did not go there to do 20 days of testing. I know somebody who went to Macau in Formula 3, put the car on pole and won in a very dominating fashion. So Max is an incredible racing talent. And as Ayrton Senna was once asked, how would a Formula One driver do in Daytona and, you know, NASCAR oval racing? And his response was very simple. If you're a good driver, you will do good anywhere. So, yeah, Max is an incredible racing talent. People wanted regime change. They got what they wished for. But as a race fan, you have to enjoy, even if you don't like the guy. I mean, it's just fun to watch. I mean, the lead he has over his teammate, number of wins he has over his teammate is just incredible. And you and I both know, doesn't matter if they gave him a 5-grid penalty or 10-glaze penalty, he's going to win the race. What it will take, if the car is running at the end, it has to take like a 45-second pit stop from Red Bull, either screwed by the team or the driver. Otherwise, you know, even if there is an 8-second pit stop, he'll find a way to win the race. So we're very fortunate to see this kind of talent. Okay, sir, now we move on to Mario wants Montezemolo back. Now, Signor Mario Andretti, and I respect this gentleman as much as any other driver on earth, dead or alive. He scored his first Grand Prix victory in 1971 at Kyalami, driving for Enzo Ferrari. Became world champion in 1978 with Lotus. He was also on pole for Scuderia at my first Formula One race at Parco Monza 1982, a moment I will never forget when this guy, I think his name was Anthony Marsh, he had a heavy voice and he said after qualifying was over, on pole position, Mario Andretti of the United States. And I was like, wow. And this is a guy who was racing full-time in Indy cars, not in Formula One at that time. In a recent interview with Planet F1, Mario expressed his frustration. You know, he's a Paisan by nationality and by birth. At what's going on at Ferrari, he would like to see Luca Di Montezemolo back in charge in Maranello. He said, and I quote, "Right now, I am disappointed in the management of the race team. Very disappointed. It's not the drivers. And I'll tell you that. It's not the drivers. They're not providing the drivers with a winning situation at the moment." End quote. The sad story here is Ferrari is not even competitive. They cannot even make a fake attempt to win a race. The revolving door at the top from Arriva Bene, the hipster, Matteucci, Binotto, Vasseur, is definitely not the solution. Not saying that these people are the problem, but the way this thing, revolving door is happening, it's not the solution. Maybe they have borrowed a chef from Alpine to cook the spaghetti. Would you like to see Luca come back for the third time, Signor Rogers?
I'd love to, but like all of us, he's not a young man anymore, folks. I mean, you know, I'm sure he would love to come back so much, but unfortunately, he's like a lot of people. He has grown old. He watches from afar. He's very astute, lucid. He knows what's going on, but I'm sure he's there a lot in the background. But no, they're going to get, I don't know. I say let's just relax. I think Vasseur can do a good job, but it takes time. You can't fire people before they have time to fix the issues, just like Zaffnauer.
You know, Luca is so old, he cannot even break TVs now, despite the season Ferrari is having.
Exactly, that's my point. He has to have somebody else to break them for him.
Yes. Okay, sir, now we come to Slings and Arrows, Alpine Way. Emo in Nando's corner. In 1972, Emerson Fittipaldi became the youngest world champion at the age of 25. In 1974, he added another title. Then he took a jumbo, crossed the water, had breakfast in America with Roger Penske, and won the Indy 500. Recently, he shared his opinion on what's going on at Alpine. He said, and I quote, "It's possible that when they lost Fernando, they lost a leader in setting up the car. The lack of a driver like Fernando that can help develop the car and make it competitive. It doesn't matter how much telemetry you have, the driver still has the feeling." And I'm sure you agree with him, Mr. Rogers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing how they lost not only Fernando Alonso, the giant from the past, still very competitive, but also the future in Oscar Piastri. And I heard all of this led to the firing of their legal counsel. And firing is order of the day at Renault and Alpine. But wait, there's more slings and arrows on Alpine. The ex-El Jefe of Renault F1 team, Cyril Abiteboul, said, and I quote, This is interesting. At the moment, the grid is very competitive with all cars finishing on the same lap. In a while, there will be a near-level playing field, and what will make the difference is ambition and determination. Every element that is changed potentially puts the team spirit and culture at risk. It is these two aspects in particular that are lacking at Alpine, end quote. I totally agree with him. Tell me what you feel, Mr. Rogers.
I agree. I mean, very, very, very true. I mean, it is a tightening grid. The top 10 are just a few tenths now. The most organized team. Ambition and determination is great, but you got to finish the race. You got to win the race. You got to know how to win. You got to be able to know how to win. And Ferrari just aren't there yet. Alpine seem to have a good car. They've got some good speed. They qualify well sometimes. They just needed to put it all together. And sometimes you need people that are unbelievably talented, like Jean Todt. You know, it's just, it's tough. And I think Zaffnauer did get ripped off, only being there barely a year.
Even Frank Montani, the ex-F1 driver and once a Briatore Jr. at Renault, has launched his own Matra rockets on Alain Permain, a longtime employee who was recently let go. And he was at Enstone since the days of Tolman. Frank Montani said, and I quote, "In 2003, Renault took him off the race team because they couldn't stand him on the race team any longer. When he returned to the test team, he tired everyone out," end quote. I guess nobody loves you when you are down and out, but I do have immense respect for Alain Permain, because now I've heard from a few sources that when Pat Simmons and Piquet Jr. and Flavio Briatore wanted him to get on the Crashgate program, he said, "I want none of this." What say you, Senor?
I agree. He was a good F1 team member. He was there from the beginning. I could understand where there could be some personality issues. That happens. Hey, that's why the Beatles broke up, folks. No, I mean, I said Alpine needed a shake-up. They're shaking it, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it starts from the very top. Renault themselves. We'll see where they want to go. Where's the motivation? What is the goal?
You know, Patrick, the late Patrick Tambay, when I spoke to him and we did the interview at the Spanish Grand Prix many years ago, and I asked him about the Renault team, because he raced with Renault, Formula One team also, and I asked him how it was compared to McLaren and Ferrari. And he said, you know, at Renault, everybody took the job as it's a job. They were not there to battle it out and slug it out. And that was his opinion. But the way this program is gone and managed, I think Dr. Marker is right. They better sell this team to Michael Andretti. He's bringing a lot of money.
I think that would be a great way to get out of Formula One and move on. Ever since Christian Horner threw Renault under the bus, they've never been able to recoup, even though I think they have a pretty decent car. Let me put it this way. Max Verstappen would make the Alpine look pretty damn good.
There you go. Okay, sir. Carlito giving Kimi company. In the 2014 season, Ferrari had two exceptional racing talents in the team. One was Fernando Alonso. He scored 161 points and was on the podium twice. His teammate was on the George Benson program throughout his racing career. We tried to talk it over, but the words got in. The one and only Kimi Raikkonen. He scored 55 points and did not make any appearance on the podium. His best finish was fourth at Spa, a track which he has won a few times. His counterpart and numero dos at Scuderia now is in danger of repeating history. Halfway through the season, Carlos Sainz Jr. is without a top three position so far. He is matching Kimi in best finished also. Carlito's fourth in the season opener in Bahrain has been his best showing so far. Senor, I do not see a victory for the Reds in the second half of the season. Can Carlito at least get on the podium once to be a better number two than Kimi? What say you?
It's possible. I mean, the car is fast occasionally. And Carlito, I like his driving style. He's good on the tires. But the Ferrari, I believe, is a handful. I mean, these guys are really pushing the car to the limit to get an ounce of extra speed. But I don't know. You know, I don't think they're going to win. I mean, Max is fully dominating. I mean, Max might not break all the records because of reliability. But other than that, it's a Max season. It's a Max year. It's a Red Bull season. It could be again next year. Unfortunately for Ferrari, other teams are making strides. Aston Martin expect to be back in the top four. McLaren, look at McLaren. I know they've got another big upgrade coming up to blow people's minds. And Mercedes, LCH, is crying, is breaking Toto's heart. I say, keep your eyes on LCH and Fernando.
You know, I don't think the Reds will win a race, but I would like to see both of them at least get on the podium. And Machismo, you know, I have to say, Carlos Sainz Jr., in his first year with Ferrari, he hit the ground running. And for me, that season, he was the most impressive driver. But hard to say that Charles Leclerc has turned the table, you know, because the car is not very competitive. But he is definitely looking as number dos to Charles Leclerc these days. And speaking of Aston Martin, hopes were very high, and I was convinced Machismo will find a way to win. But now he's struggling to get on the podium. I think he will get a podium or two, but I think, unfortunately, the team will prove me wrong and they will not win a race. But such is life. Now we come to points to ponder. Here we take and twist a leaf from Jim McKay and ABC's Wide World of Sports and bring you a constant variety of racing records. Today we will look at longest point scoring streaks in Formula One. Sorry, we don't have Jackie Stewart or Arnold Palmer in the palatial studios, but we do have Mr. Clark Rogers. And Mr. Rogers, I must give credit to the source I got this info from. This is from a website called planetf1.com. Okay, the longest streak of scoring points, okay, is, drum roll please, Mr. Lewis Hamilton, 48, from the 2018 British Grand Prix to the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix. And if that was not bad enough, the guy in second place with the second longest winning streak is Lewis Hamilton. This time, 33 races from the 2016 Japanese Grand Prix to the French Grand Prix 2018, which is unfortunately no longer on the calendar. Third, going third with 31 races scoring point streak. Going Henley on Hamilton, singing, "Coming right behind you, swear I'm gonna find you one of these nights." It's the one and only Max Verstappen. That's 31 races and counting from the 2022 Emilia-Romagna Maiden Italy Grand Prix to no end in sight. And fourth, 27 races in a row scoring is Kimi Raikkonen from the 2012 Bahrain Grand Prix to the Hungarian Goulash of 2013. And it's very, very rare that when you are talking of records in Formula One that you don't see Michael Schumacher's name either first, second, or at worst third. But on this front, he is fifth. 24 races from the 2001 Hungarian Grand Prix to the 2003 Malaysian Grand Prix. And Mr. Rogers, will you remind, you know, 2001 was the season Nando came into Formula One, right?
Absolutely correct, with Kimi Raikkonen and your friend and fellow Latino, Juan Pablo Montoya.
My fellow Latino?
We're all brothers, Nasser.
Have you started working for Crayola?
I have.
Okay, just kidding. Okay. Okay, sir, it's amazing what time will do. In the halcyon days of Schumi at Ferrari, I used to say that if Hans Christian Andersen was to write an F1 fairy tale, his hero would not be as successful as Michael Schumacher. And here we are today. Most of his records now belong to Lewis and Max. Numbers are numbers and records are meant to be broken, something Michael Schumacher told Mick Schumacher. They will never overshadow Michael's achievements, nor will they for any of the great legends of the Formula One we respect so much, whether it's Jim Clark, Ayrton Senna, Juan Manuel Fangio, Prost, and Machismo. Do you agree, sir?
I do agree, absolutely. I mean, these people are legends. We're lucky we're watching legends as we speak. Beginning their career, ending their career. I think this is a pretty cool era to be watching at Formula One.
Yeah, we have even seen racing drivers become world champion and their children become world champion and grandson have tried to do something. Some have not worked out. But I think it's been a very, for the era, you and I have been watching Formula One and most of the people in our age group and members of F1 Weekly Familia, we have been blessed with a lot of incredible talent happenings. I still cannot believe that a teenager, somebody had told me 10 years ago that a teenager will win a Grand Prix, I'm going to say get out. You know, we saw Mike Tackwell come at a very young age. We saw Jaime Alguersuari, Sebastian Vettel, but Max has just taken it to a very different level. Okay, sir, speaking of Max, shall we take a hiney break?
That's a good idea, Nasser. Keep up the good work. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Juan Pablo Montoya, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rogers, you know, when we started this podcast, or when you and I got together, we were hoping that we will go and interview young drivers as they progress. Hopefully, we will have an audience with them in Formula One. Little did we know how close the F1 shop was and is. But anyway, one of the young, talented drivers we met when we started going overseas and doing interviews for Jules Bianchi. And I have to say, between Jules Bianchi and Valtteri Bottas, having met both these drivers several times and spoken to them, they are very, very nice people and very down to earth. And it's a shame what happened to poor Jules Bianchi. I remember, you know, him even coming up to races to say hello to me, and that was so nice of him. And, you know, he passed away this month at the following his accident at the Japanese Grand Prix. So I thought, you know, we should remember this nice young gentleman and a very good racing driver by playing one of the interviews from the archives. Okay, folks, I'm in the press room of Hockenheimring with a young gentleman from Viva la France who has just won the race and is also the 2009 champion F3 Euro Series. Jules, welcome back to F1 Weekly. What is the feeling of winning the championship and the race?
Well, I mean, it's a really good feeling for me. After Dijon, we did a really good job. To win here in Hockenheim was really special for me, because after the first race in the beginning of the season was a bit difficult. You remember, I finished P5 and P3, and we were not really fast. So to win today, it's really important for me and for the team. We also won now the driver championship and also the team championship. I think it's over. I'm not sure, but I think it's finished now. We won, so it's really good for everybody.
Now, Dijon, of course, is in your home country. What was the feeling like? What was the first thing you thought of when you took the checkered flag at Dijon Prix Noir?
I was not realizing what that was finished. You know, was over the championship. I just make a really good race, starting P7 and finish P1. It was just great for me. I was just so happy.
Dijon Prix Noir is very famous for what happened there 30 years ago. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure.
Okay, the Gilles Villeneuve and René Arda. Have you ever watched that on YouTube or a video?
Yes, of course. I saw it. Everybody saw it and was very special. And it's a really good track. It's just a fantastic track, really fast. And you can overtake. And as you see, 30 years ago, you can overtake. So it's really good.
Okay, 2009 was your second year in F3 Euro Series. You had a big win last year in the Masters of F3. What was the most important thing you learned last year that helped you win? I wrote down 8 races, but now it's 9 races.
Yes, I mean, I improve a lot about my concentration, about to stay calm when I'm not in position to win the race. You know, when I am like P3 or P4, I just stay here and wait to take points to the championship like I did in the first race here. And last year was my problem because I just wanted to win too much, so I did so much mistake.
Okay, last year your teammate was Nico Hülkenberg, who did win the championship. How was your working relationship with him, and did you learn anything from him?
Yes, of course, I learned a lot about driving style because you, as you know, I think you can see all the data of the other driver of each team. Not each team, but I mean IRT can see all the data of IRT team, and everybody is like that. So last year I look a lot of his data, and I improve about this, but I was not speaking too much with him because, you know, when you are really close between two drivers, it's difficult to be friends.
Okay. Now, this year you had 3 rookies, very promising rookies, just like you were very promising last year. Is pressure from within a team good for the driver, or would you prefer pressure from another team?
Oh, of course, it's good to have a good driver in my home team, in the same team, because after that you can look at the data, you can improve yourself. So for sure, it's better to have a good driver in your team than not a good driver, because you improve so much.
The first preseason testing took place in Estoril, Portugal, and you had the fastest time on both days. Did that give you high confidence for the championship this year?
Yes, of course, the test helped me a lot. We did a really good job. We work a lot. We test a lot of things in Estoril and also in Valencia. So for sure was the most important thing is to get the championship well prepared. You know, if you arrive in the first race and you are well prepared, for sure you will do first part of the season really good. So you have to arrive well prepared, and we did it. We was really good prepared for the first race. I mean, normally yes, but for sure we had a problem in a rear bump in Hockenheim first race. So it's for that we were not really fast. But we were prepared enough, so it was good.
You took pole position for the 2009 Masters of F3 at Zandvoort, but then you were given a 5-grid penalty. How disappointed were you, and do you think the penalty was justified?
I mean, of course, I was a lot disappointed because nobody won two times the Masters. So I was a lot disappointed because we did a really good job. We made the pole position, so cannot say nothing because the marshal decide like that. What can I say? Yes, of course I was disappointed, but they did our job.
Did you cry?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. Nice to know you're human. Okay, Zandvoort was also the place where you scored your first pole position of the regular season. What was the reason for winning races but not pole till round 7?
Because, I mean, maybe a bit of bad luck in qualifying. Of course, in Nürburgring I had bad luck because the track was drying, and Alexander Sims makes the pole position in the last lap. So for sure Nürburgring was like that, but I was all the time P2 or P3, so I was not far. And then in Zandvoort everything was going really well, and I wanted to take my, how you say it, after the master, you know. I was angry, so I wanted a lot to win here, and I just push and work a lot with my engineer.
Okay. You won both races going back to Zandvoort. Saturday win was special, as it was 100th win for Mercedes-Benz in F3 Euro Series. Did you get a big hug from Norbert Haug?
Not a hug, but for sure we spoke together, and it was really, really good to meet him.
What were some of the best moments and highlights and lowlights of this season?
For me, the best moment was Zandvoort. Because I won 2 races in the same weekend, same meeting, so was for sure the best moment of the season.
Okay. There are several young drivers who are pretty good and fast here. Who impressed you most, and who was the biggest surprise for you in terms of speed among the other drivers?
For sure, Valtteri was very impressive this year. He did a very good job. He finished, I think he will finish P3 in championship. It's not sure yet, but normally it will do it.
Will you help him?
I'm not like that. It's not my goal. If I am behind him, for sure I will not break so late and crash with him, but I will do my race and I will not look at everybody because it's so difficult to do that.
But if you're leading and he's trying to win the race, you're going to say to him, adieu à la nuit?
Yeah. No, for sure I will not let him win the race if I am first and he is second. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Now, separate issue. As a racing driver, you know what happened with the Piquet situation in Singapore. First of all, when you first heard it, did you believe it? And what's your thought on it?
No, I didn't think it was true. I just think it was bullshit. But at the end, it's true, so I don't understand that. It's his decision, so nothing to say.
Are there any team orders, not to crash, but during the regular season with ART between drivers? Does the team issue any orders, or are team orders allowed in F3 Euro Series?
No, no, it's not like that. The team, yeah, for sure, Frédéric Vasseur come to see each other before the race. Like today, we were P1 and P2. We were racing for the team championship, so he come to us and say, be calm, don't crash together, and that's all.
Okay. Your dad runs a kart track in Brignoles. Do you race there when you get a chance?
Yes, I raced there. I raced there 2 years ago because there was a race in 1-5, you know, the gearbox karting. And now I'm not racing anymore because it's too dangerous to make racing karting. If I crash and if I break my arms or something like that, it's dangerous. So I just train and just play, have fun.
You are now headed to GP2 with the same team, ART. Two questions. What is the goal for 2010? And will the physical preparation change much from F3 Euro Series?
The goal for sure will be to win the championship. I will go there to win the championship. I know it's going to be really difficult because it's a really high-level championship, like in F3, but it's even more difficult with the pit stop and everything. You have to improve, you have to learn new things, pit stop and just a clutch with hand clutch. So for sure it will be difficult, but I will try a lot, I will work a lot in the test in Paul Ricard and also in the test of the first test of the season next year. And for sure I will change my physical preparation because it's a lot more difficult to drive a GP2 car than an F3 car.
Your teammate from last season, Nico Hülkenberg, also with ART, won the championship in GP2 this year. Was that a surprise for you?
Not really. I mean, I knew that he was really fast, so it was not really a surprise for me.
I would love to see you win GP2 in your rookie season. Okay, in 3 years you have won 2 championships. What is the advice you will give to young kids who are in karting these days? What steps should they do once they get into single-seaters?
I think if they really want, they will do it, so they just have to be concentrated to do their best, to work a lot on physical part because it's really important to learn English, as I still do because my English is not really perfect and I have to improve everything, so just believe it.
Man, you can say bullshit, so you're doing pretty good in English.
Thank you.
Okay, you have always raced with French teams. Do you think when you drive for a non-French team, it would pose a new challenge for you? I'm talking about English also.
Yes, of course, it will be a new challenge for me to speak, to know the technical words and everything. For sure, it will be a challenge, and it will be, of course, better for me for the future.
I understand you also like football. What is your favorite team, and who is your favorite player?
My favorite team is Marseille. It's a French team. And then my favorite player is, I think, Zidane.
It's Zinedine Zidane?
Yeah, it's not playing anymore, but he is the best.
He is. And he let the Italian team also know that.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please. We report on all your success, and you have a good following on our podcast. How about a message for them, please?
Just thank you to follow me, and I hope I will see you in the track, maybe in the future.
Oh yes, I'll be waiting for that invitation for a Formula One race from you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks to you.
Jules, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, sir, now we are going to IndyCar racing from the road version at the Brickyard, in other words, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, now under Penske management, where everything is first class. Graham Rahal starts from pole position. He looks set to win his first race in 6 years, but then wily old fox, Scott Dixon, got in the way. Man from New Zealand won the race in his record-setting 319 consecutive starts. Very, very impressive. Dixon is now second on the all-time winners list. Only man ahead is Super Tex, Mr. A.J. Foyt from Houston, proving once again, everything is big in Texas. McLaren, Mexican driver, Pato Ward was third. Did you watch any of this race, sir?
I did. I watched a lot of the race. It was very interesting. You know, to be honest with you, I even watched the NASCAR race, which was the following day. Because, you know, there's not much Formula One happening right now. So I did watch the race. I was stunned. I mean, I admit it. I give Graham Rahal a lot of flack. I know. It's what I like to do. And when I saw he got pole position and finished second, I was pretty surprised. I mean, all I could think of, Graham ate his Wheaties that morning.
Yes. In the championship, Alex Palou still leads with 539 points. Race winner Dixon is second on 438 points, and both drive for Chip Ganassi. Penske pilot Joseph Newgarden is third in the championship with 434 points. The Indy Next Race, which is the IndyCar version of Formula 2, was won by Hunter McIlroy, a double winning day for New Zealand. There are two rookies in this series who I think will be big names in IndyCar racing in the near future. One is from Northern California, Palo Alto area, not too far from where you are, Nolan Siegel. The other is from jolly old England, Louis Foster. We interviewed both these young drivers earlier in the season, and I'm keeping an eye on them because I have a feeling that they will burst upon the IndyCar scene one of these days. Christian Rasmussen from Denmark leads the championship over McIlroy, 362 points to 329, and Rasmussen is in his second year, and both Nolan Siegel and Louis Foster, they are rookie and they're doing a what you call outstanding job. Now we come to the Isaac Hayes moment. Alex Palou has become muy macho hombre de España on this side of the pond. In 2021, he won the IndyCar championship with Chip Ganassi and lost a very late race opportunity to win the Indy 500 some years ago to Castro Neves, and I was there. Then he tried to be Bobby Fuller of motorsports and fought the law, but the law won. For this season, he wanted to leave Ganassi Racing and join Zak Brown's McLaren IndyCar program. Unlike Oscar Piastri, Zak Brown and company did not win this legal battle. Palou stayed with Ganassi for 2023 and had his hopes high that in 2024 he will drive for McLaren in IndyCars and one fine day race in everybody's wet and wild dream, Formula One. This season, he's gunning for his second championship in 3 years with Ganassi team. This has left him with no choice but to insert an Isaac Hayes CD in his Sony, and we all know what that tune is.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? You're damn right.
Needless to say, Mr. Brown is not enjoying the tune. He sent a letter to his employees, which apparently a copy was obtained or sent to Associated Press, and this is what he wrote, and I quote, "I'm extremely disappointed that Alex Palou does not intend to honor his contractual obligation to race with us in IndyCar in 2024 and beyond. This is incredibly disappointing, considering the commitment he has made to us both directly and publicly, and our significant investment in him based on that commitment. End quote. Apparently, McLaren paid his fees in the battle of legal beagles and also made him an advance salary payment. Question of the day, brought to you in part by Nabisco. Did somebody say karma? What goes around comes around. That's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Mr. Rogers, breaking contracts and heartaches, nothing new in the world of motor racing. Do you agree with this decision?
Well, it's interesting because, so Zak Brown steals, I guess he helped Piastri leave Alpine where he had significant investment from Alpine for development and help him in his career.
Palou is doing basically the same thing to Zach Brown, what Zach Brown did to Alpine. I think it's sort of bizarre, but yeah, I guess this is trending, giving people the shaft. You know, that's why Fernando really needs to write that book to help some of these young people make proper decisions. But the rumor is Palou is going to get the seat at AlphaTauri. But, you know, I haven't heard anything about this, but he believes it, and we'll see what happens. Dr. Marco, I'm sure, has the dirt.
I have a question for you, Fernando's book. Do you think he will ask Lewis Hamilton to write the foreword?
Absolutely. He might even have a hand in helping with the glossary of terms that the book will have in the back. The screaming, GP2, all that stuff is going to be in there, Nasser.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And I'm sure it will be available for free of charge at all Honda dealerships across the world.
Absolutely. You bet.
Buy a Honda Civic and get this book. That'll be beautiful. Okay, sir, we have to move on. Nyck de Vries coming to America, not for racing laps, but for hanging out with Ivy Leaguers. And this is from racingnews365.com. He said, and I quote, "In September, I'm going to take a course in Harvard in negotiation and leadership. Bit of study," end quote. He also said, "I've never studied before in my life. In fact, I didn't even finish high school. And I will never forget a German journalist who was covering the karting scene when he was in karting. And he was very, very good. And she told me this kid has no life. When there is a race in Portugal, Spain, wherever, the daddy takes him a couple of weeks before, hires a track, hires the best karting, you know, driver there. And he just puts him through intense training." Kind of like a Nyck de Vries. But Nyck de Vries was getting training in a two-year-old Mercedes Formula One car around the world. Now, you know, you do what you can. Okay? Okay, so now this is something of much interest to me. We come to our goodie bag. Today we have our monthly Mondial. Today we are presenting the month of August in motor racing history. This is something I really, really enjoy, digging up information, and a lot of time I don't know some of the stuff. Anyway, we shall begin. August 20th, 1941. No, we're not talking invasion of Russia or anything like that. But it is south of the border, down Mexico Way. A child was born in Mexico City on this day and was named Joaquin Rodriguez. Today, the racing world knows him as Joe Ramirez. As a young man, he traveled to Europe with teenage racing sensation Ricardo Rodriguez. After the death of Ricardo, Joe stayed in Europe, and I believe he worked for Maserati in Italy, where Fangio told him, go to England. He was having some visa problems in Italy, and have a chat with John Wire of the John Wire Sports Program, who brought us the beautiful Gulf Ford and Porsche cars. And he did that before entering the beautiful world of Formula One. Joe was with Ken Tyrrell's team in 1973 and was at Watkins Glen when Francois Servais had his accident, fatal accident. And he talks about this accident in detail, which is very, very sad, what he writes about collecting his car and personal belongings after the accident. Joe was at McLaren and saw the dirty lowdown between Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost up close and personal. He now resides in Spain. And Mr. Roger, you may recall, I once ran into him at the Autosport show in Birmingham, England, and we did a quick interview with him. Maybe we can dig up in from the archives also. What say you?
That's a good idea. That's a great, great story. His book is wonderful. Love it.
Okay, sir, now we come to August 8, 1953, very important day. The ultimate Birmingham hustler arrived on this day. he was not everybody's cup of tea. To Murray Walker, he was our Nige. To the Tifosi's, he was Il Leone, the Lion. Because he won on debut with Ferrari in Brazil, if you recall. To Lotus team manager Peter Waugh, he was an, these are his own words, uncouth Brummy who did not know how to handle himself. And Mr. Rogers, for little me, he is the chap who made the most daring pass in Grand Prix racing in Mexico City in 1990. Good afternoon, Mr. Gerhard Berger.
As we ride with Gerhard Berger on the last lap of the Mexican Grand Prix, with Alain Prost seemingly going to win it, and Mansell going round the outside. Incredible!
Next, we come to August 11, 1953. This was the day when the driver considered the greatest of all by Enzo Ferrari of all the people passed away, his name Tazio Nuvolari. The Flying Mentuan, as he was called, won Grand Prix races in places like Tripoli, Targa Florio, Mille Miglia, Monte Carlo. His greatest triumph was victory in the 1935 German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring. Driving in Alfa Romeo P3, he beat the more powerful car from Mercedes in Auto Union, and this car is now at the Alfa Romeo Museum in Arese near Milano. And Mr. Royer, some years ago, when I went with my friend to the San Marino Grand Prix, I believe it was 2004, we went to the Nuvolari Museum in Mantua, and my understanding is it has since been closed, which is very shame. It's a big shame, and so is the case with the Ronnie Peterson Museum. Okay, August 2nd, 1959. The German Grand Prix took place in West Berlin at the AWO circuit. It was the first time in Formula One history the podium was all Ferrari red. English dentist Tony Brooks was the winner, followed by his teammate from across the pond and Southern California, Dan Gurney second and Phil Hill third. The well-known French driver of the era, Jean Béra, was killed in a sports car race at the track on Saturday when his Porsche went off the banking and hit a pole. And you know, they were doing DTM races and thing late 80s and 90s at this track, street circuit, but they don't do it anymore. Very important day for sports car fans. August 10, 1969, first ever win for the famous Porsche 917. I understand this car is at the Monterey Historics. Is that correct, Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
This is a beautiful car. So the first victory for this car came at the Zellfach 1000 kilometer in Austria. The privately entered car was driven by Joe Siffert and Kurt Ahrens Jr. And Zellfach, the airport, is just a mile or two away from the new Red Bull Ring. And man, what a beautiful place this is. August 25th, 1974, Road America, Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. Very important day for sports car racing in the US and the world. The last ever Can-Am race took place on this day. The race was won by driver from Southern California, Scooter Patrick, in the McLaren M20. Now we come to August 19, 1975, Graz, Austria. Mark Donohue, the driver who gave Roger Penske his first victory in the Indy 500 in 1972, passes away in an Austrian hospital after suffering internal head injuries during Sunday morning warm-up session for the Grand Prix. And Graz, Mr. Rogers, is the hometown of Jochen Rein and Dr. Helmut Marko. And as happens, unfortunately, in this situation, his family sued Goodyear because the tire had blown up. And it took many, many years before the lawsuit was settled. Okay, so now we go to Germany. August 1st, 1976, German Grand Prix. Final Formula One race at the Greenhill. The race was won by James Hunt in the McLaren, but it is better known today for the fiery crash of Niki Lauda in his Ferrari. Now, this was a very sad day, and I remember reading this in a local newspaper. August 1st, 1980, Patrick Depailly, French Alfa Romeo driver killed in testing at the Hockenheim Ring. Depailly took his first win in Monaco, 1978, and came from Clermont-Ferrand. This town is home to another very famous French name around the world, except in the city of Indianapolis. and that name is Michelin. Now we come to August 10, 1986, Budapest, Hungary. The most glamorous capitalist game goes behind the Iron Curtain for the first time. The race was won by Williams Honda of Nelson Piquet. But it was his slip-in and sliding pass of all the people on his compadre Ayrton Senna that is talk of the track to this day. Simply beyond marvelous. And if anybody has not seen this, please write on YouTube channel Nelson Piquet Ayrton Senna 1986 Hungaro Ring. You will love it. Okay, sir, that was the monthly Mondial for this edition. Okay, and next we go behind the Swedish curtain, and this is very important. I would like to give a shout out to F1 Weekly familiar member in Sweden, Mr. Stefan Alstorp. I was looking for some information about Ronnie Peterson's brother and his manager, Stefan Svenby, and he very kindly responded very quickly and with very useful information. Now, Stefan, as we have mentioned, puts out a regular motorsports newsletter which provides headlines from various racing websites, and I'm very pleased to say I am on his mailing list and use this newsletter on a regular basis. Thank you, sir, for your mighty fine cooperation. Much appreciated. And, sir, finally, we come to Musical Mondial. And this time, another shout-out to another member of F1 Weekly Familia, Signor Louis Jensen in the Netherlands. He sent me a link to some very beautiful sound of music from south of the border. The tune on the track is from the 1990 edition of Gran Premio de Mexico. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy. Adios till we meet again in the Palatial Studios. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.